Thanksgiving week in the United States, so the schedule gets a little up
wacky.
In the air,
wacky
tossed around.
Yes. Wacky is the word.
It's a different type of approach than we usually get throughout the season. So you'll see a lot of games on nights that there's not usually a lot of games. And obviously the Thursday it shuts down. Are we seeing some little stretch out of the National Hockey League standings right now?
Well, what we're seeing is now, in my opinion, teams getting second wins. Like teams that we shook our heads at and said they've got to be better than that in the first two or three weeks are now on a bit of a roll. Minnesota is on a bit of a roll. Calgary's won three in a row after we, you know, we had them going through a death march. Calgary has told people that they're not out of it, and obviously the way they played the last three games, they're not out of anything. Buffalo was playing better. There's some, and then of course Colorado, and you know they're in a league of their own.
There's a couple of teams where I'm wondering what will be the next thing to drop, and they both have relatively new coaches or brand new coaches, and that's Vancouver or St. Louis, because the management and the coaches and the players have all been through a bit of a journey already. 22 games in the season.
Both are at very interesting points. I mean,
there's expectations on both.
Yes, and you know, I think that people in Vancouver thought they would be better than this. Losing to Calgary on Sunday night would have to be a huge disappointment. But you know, when the season started, injuries are never contemplated, and we said Thatcher Demko is one of the best goalies in hockey if he stays healthy. Well, you know what? He's not healthy again, and so he's been out 2 weeks. And so, how does that affect what the Canucks are? They haven't really been able to muster as much offense as they've wanted in Vancouver, and you know, their big linchpin was always going to be how good their defense was, and quite frankly, their defense has let them down, particularly, you know, on this last road trip where they went 1-1-1. Their defense was not very good, and they come home, and again, they get beaten by a young, more aggressive Calgary team that looked pretty darn good. St. Louis is a fascinating one. This is a transition year in St. Louis when you consider that Doug Armstrong is leaving the manager's post at the end of the year, and Alex Steen is taking over. So in talking with ownership, what would be the preference, to start from scratch or try to muscle through this and have Doug lead Alex through the next two or three months in order to try to be competitive? This is not much different than the start the Blues had last year.
Very similar.
Yeah. And but that was Drew Bannister, and then it was about this time of year where Jim Montgomery came in and took over. And then remember what happened after Four Nations, and Montgomery had his staff meetings, and what they did between the end of February and the end of the regular season, they were the best team in hockey. So what, with a lot of the same players. So what do you just say that? Do you say, come on, it's a long schedule, we're going to be fine? It's a fascinating conversation to have.
What do you think St. Louis is? The fine, it'll be okay, give them more rope, or do they need a change to be competitive? The third option is you do a rebuild.
That would put, in my opinion, that puts Alex Steen in a very difficult
position. I agree.
He's a good hockey person. He understands the game well, but he's a neophyte when it comes to being a manager. He's a neophyte. And so I just don't know how you can do that to him.
So I think they get more leash.
Yes. And I would give them more leash because I don't think Jim Montgomery's become a bad coach. You know, their goaltending hasn't been very good. Now, Jordan Binnington was really good on the island on Saturday afternoon. Really good. But Joel Hofer has not done what he was supposed to do. They thought I mean, Doug Armstrong came on this show at the beginning of the season, said he thought they had the best goalie tandem in hockey.
I thought it was top five.
Well, Joe, and that was before they lost Colton Ellis to the Sabres. You know, so that part has let them down. Can that be resurrected? Probably. And then, you know, they got a couple of defensemen that are a little long in the tooth. And how do they transition from that? So that becomes, and as soon as people say that, we're going to start hearing about Colton Parayko is going to get traded. Justin Falk's going to get moved. And, you know, that then if you're doing that, we are talking some type of rebuild. But Robert Thomas, who's healthy again, I think, you wonder at times, they've got some really good forwards. And I don't know why they're not playing at the same level that they didn't after Four Nations. And I'm sure Jim Montgomery's wondering the same thing.
Be around the game forever and still not have it figured out. There's highs and there's lows. Even if you win a couple of times, it still challenges.
Well, and look at the Edmonton Oilers. Look at the Edmonton Oilers, who I didn't give them much chance to win Saturday night in Sunrise. And they go out early and then hang on for dear life to win and don't get disguised by the score. The second half of the game was all Panthers. And the Oilers held on and got a couple of Ovechkin net goals to win. So, and they come off the road trip and, you know, I think they're in Edmonton. They're thinking, well, here we go. We finally got the spark. Yeah. But they've, you know, it's like me starting my snowblower. You know, I think I got it started and then poof, it breaks down again.
Yeah, you take two steps away and it's a boom.
Yeah. And then you don't have that problem with your snowblower.
No.
I
do. Not yet, anyway.
What does that mean? You think you've never used a snowblower in Vegas in your life. You don't even have a snowblower anymore. No,
leaf blower. I got to get the leaf blower fired up. That's what I have to do. We got Lou Lamoriello. He just joined the waiting room. So let's get to him. A guy that you've known for a long time. Yep. He can be intimidating. He can be abrupt. He can be engaging. At times, it's fascinating talking to Lou Lamoriello, but you're never going to get anything for free.
Well, no, it's fascinating because Lou obviously has a new job with the Islanders after all these years. Lou is also very close to the Steinbrenner family with the Yankees, has been on the board of the Yankees for, gosh, I want to say decades, but let's say years. Loves the game of baseball, loves the game of hockey, and I don't think in any subtle way I've seen or heard anybody as competitive as Lou Lamoriello. He is so competitive, which has always kept him in good stead, no matter what age he is.
There's some obvious angles, and then we'll see if we can circle back and try to pry out a couple of those loose threads along the way. Lou Lamoriello coming up on 100% Hockey.
Good luck with that. Chatter. Trying to find Lou. Lou's never going to tell us anything.
NHL TV is now on DAZN. Hockey lives here.
Here we go.
Watch every game. From every team. The best players in the world. And the coldest plays on ice. Watch up to four games at once for the ultimate NHL experience. Sign up now at DAZN.
As promised, Lou Lamoriello joined us on 100% Hockey. You're not fully retired, but how has your life... Give me an example. How has your morning been different than it was when you were running a hockey team?
Well, first of all, the waking up is not different. The time and doing the things that I would do before I got involved with whatever the day to bring hasn't changed. But what has changed is with the normal process that you'd have if you were running a hockey team, which is the morning you get to the office, there's something that's going to happen every minute.
So how would you describe your new job?
Just what it is, John. Very simplistic as a consultant, as an advisor, so when needed. The only person that I really communicate with is the owner on a lot of different things, and being involved with league operations and still with the Board of Governors and things like that, but actively not involved with hockey. Certainly, if Matthew wanted to talk, I'd be there. But I know what the job entails. I know how important it is to be independent just the support mechanism.
Mr. Malkin lives most of the time in England, but is a diverse businessman, a very successful, diverse businessman. Does that mean your consultancy reaches beyond just the Islanders?
We talk about everything, John. Anything.
Is he a Yankee fan?
Pardon me?
Is he a Yankee fan?
He's not really a baseball fan, to my knowledge. That was another perk of not being involved. I was able to, get to all the games. And I think my relationship and involvement with them.
So what do you think of the performance of the team that you handed over to Matthew?
Well, I think they're playing, outstanding hockey. I've seen every game. But I believed in the team last year. I thought that was, without question, a playoff team. And we were hit with a rash of injuries. And unfortunately, you cannot overcome them. And still, we had an opportunity to get in the playoffs at a given time. And, had to make a certain decision at the trade deadline with reference to, Brock Nelson, which turned out fine. But I didn't feel as though that was a team that needed to be depleted in any way whatsoever. And I like what Matthew's done with the adjustments he's made. And certainly I feel they can continue to do what they're doing.
How would a GM's job differ in 2025 or even your last year to when you started with the Devils in 87?
Well, I think the biggest difference is that there are so many different people involved within the organization. Just think about it. Start from behind the bench. We got four coaches now. We've got, the staff just keeps to be getting bigger and bigger. So I think that's what's transpired. And also the number of teams that are in the league today weren't there in those days. And so you cannot do a lot of the things that you did in the past today. You have to stay on top of what's going on within your organization and depend upon your scouts more than ever, depend upon your development people, so many different areas, and just managing and just keeping on top of whatever extenuating circumstances come in. But it's very time consuming today, more so than ever. Just think of the summer. There's no summers. Before there were breaks. Now there's no break. There's, underage tournaments. There's always something going on.
So it's less fun today than it was when you started as far as running a team?
Well, I think there's more involved. I wouldn't say it's less fun. Fun comes in success. The fun comes in winning. That's the fun. No matter how much time you spend, it's the end result. Unless you have that, it's I wouldn't call it fun.
So would you choose back then over now, though?
I don't know if I would choose the past anymore. I think it's more challenging today. And I think that if you like challenges, it's still equal to everyone else. Everyone has the same issues and the same problems, and it's just how you handle them. The game is in a great place. I mean, what I've done and had the opportunity now is to watch a lot more games, and because less time is spent with your own team. And the development of some of the young players is just incredible. When you look at the top five scorers, I think they're second-year players right now, three of them, other than, McDavid and, Drysdale and McKinnon, who they're all young fellas, which is great for the game.
Your competitive juices are the same, though, I would assume.
Oh, there's no question. I don't think you lose that. All you have to do is think of what you do, John. I know you, and we go way back. I don't think you ever lose it. That's just part of your DNA, and Darren the same. I mean, you do, and you're the best at what you want to be and what you do.
So I'm just curious then, this transition, did you have to learn to adapt? Was there, you've always told me over the years that you never stopped learning. Did you learn to adapt to this new role?
Well, I think so. I think you learn because what you do is, you know, I'm a believer in yesterday, today, and tomorrow. There's nothing you can do about yesterday. It's what you can do today. And, you know, and I think that's what you do. You just focus in on what you have and you can do. But learning, you learn every day. And I think that's the great part of this game. You know, you look back, you think of some of the things that, you know, maybe you might change, and why? Because of some of the experiences you've had with making some of the decisions. So you learn every day, and I think that's what keeps you going when you learn. And I've always said, when you think you've learned everything, it's really time to go, you know, out of the pasture with, you know, just the normal world.
Oh, your mic, Darren.
We all know people that have claimed to know everything, haven't we? Along the way, we probably wanted to put them out to pasture. Let's take a quick break. We want to pull on a couple of things that could end up being extended conversations and don't want to interrupt it. It's Lou Lamoriello on 100% Hockey with Millar and Shannon. Lou, how are today's athletes different to communicate with and deal with than when you started way back when?
I haven't felt that they're any different. I think the major thing that has changed is the shape that the players are in today. You know, the way they take care of themselves on and off the ice, the preparation during the summer, certainly in all sports, it has to do with the more longevity you have, you know, the better it is for your salaries, for the money end of it. The money is different than it is, you know, was in the past. And I think that the players understand that, representatives. They have now skating coaches in the summer, skill coaches. There's so much that has changed before they came to training camp to get in shape. And now with the new collective bargaining agreement, they've adjusted to that, too. I mean, training camp is going to be shorter than ever next year. So I think the athletes have changed in how they take care of themselves. And I think off the ice, social media has helped that, because they have to be careful where they go, what they do, and how they do it. So a combination of both, they're in better shape, almost to the point where I think that a lot of injuries are coming because they're in such good shape with low body fats that there's no resilience in them.
Hold on. You think social media is good, Lou?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I think you know that. So
no, but I was surprised to hear you say social media has helped the players.
No, I think what has happened is that it's, you know, sort of restrained them from anything that might have been able to, you know, been done behind the scenes. And taking care of themselves. There's no place they can go without, you know, somebody having a phone on, or, you know, somebody looking at them. And as a result, they're in better shape and taking care of themselves. And that's no disrespect. There's nothing wrong with what I'm saying. I just think that they've had an effect.
Do you have a social media account?
No. Nor will I.
I didn't see his Snapchat or TikTok, but I thought there might be a Twitter or Facebook in there.
Lou on TikTok would be great.
Darren, you really wanted to get a smile out of John, didn't you?
what do you think? You brought up training camp. How about the relaxed dress code?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm really in favor of that. But, you know, it's times have changed. It's still up to the individual players. And I know of some players who will always dress a certain way. I can remember, you know, when Johnny Boychuk came to us in you know, Long Island. And, you know, we relaxed. Every year you relaxed it. I certainly have. over the years, you change. And John, I remember saying to me, Lou, I will never not, you know, go with a jacket and tie ever as long as I'm in the game. That's something that he felt was important as far as how he felt about himself. I'm sure John won't mind me saying that. But so it's just an example. You're still going to have the people who want to. And I think you see that in other sports, too. But I don't have any problem with the relaxing. It's just the times we're in.
The one thing that that you always had was you, and I remember talking to your Devils players about this. Your rapport with players was exceptional. How did you manage between the personal and professional side of the guys that played for you?
Well, I think, John, that goes back to my college days with that. And I've always said this in the first meeting I had in college with the players was I put a triangle on the board. And that triangle had three words: person, player, and student. And I said that no matter how long you stayed in school, if it was 1 year, 2 year, three, or four, and left to go play pro or whatever, this meeting, you'd hear it that number of years, and that was it. And going, and what I meant by that is that if I were having a conversation, with one of the student athletes about hockey, I would never bring in off the ice or their academics. I would focus only on what the thought was. In other words, I wouldn't bring him in and talk about hockey that he wasn't playing well and then saying your studies are bad too. Mm-hmm. I'd focus on that. And when I left college, when I went to pro, it was the person and the player. So I never overlapped any of those conversations in any way whatsoever. So when they were in my office and we were talking about, how they were playing or if they had any questions about hockey, never brought anything else up whatsoever. And vice versa, that if there was a family problem or anything, or we're getting on the bus, or you don't not say good morning, or you don't talk to them of how are your children. Always separated that. And to this day, I'm a believer in that. And, you try and get your coaches to think that way. You try and get everybody to think that way, because they are two different people in one in professional sports.
But. The reality is you helped a lot of guys away from the game. And I know you don't like talking about it because it's personal for them too. But there was a role that you played in it for a lot of players.
Well, I think that's part of my responsibility. They made a commitment to, give everything they had, and made decisions for all the reasons. And I think that it's a two-way street. And to this day, the communication I have with a lot of the past players will never leave whatsoever, whether they were traded and whether we brought them back, no matter what. That's the one thing, in my mind, is more important than anything, that end of it. And I think a compliment that can be given to any athlete is that, yes, he's a great player, but he's even a better person. Mm. And I think that part of the game is something we should never lose, because we're dealing with people with a lot of different problems that transpire. And, yes, I believe in it being confidential, because you do it for the right reasons, not for any type of exposure or publicity or anything socially.
Have you ever reached out to a player because all the thousands, hundreds of thousands of decisions you've made and said, hey, I'm sorry, I should have given you a longer look or a better chance? Have you ever had that conversation with one of your players from the past?
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. And it's more to help him that it might not have been all on him. And maybe we didn't give him that. And that, the words, go forward. Don't take any disappointment or anything that you felt was all your fault. And a lot is on us sometimes. Absolutely. And sometimes we bring players up too soon. Sometimes maybe a little late. And I've always said if you have that choice, you do it a little late, because the longevity of their career would be a lot better than too soon.
Can you compare and contrast being a manager in Canada versus being one with two American teams?
No, I thought it was the same.
You did?
I had no issues. And maybe because, John, of my relationship with the media and the ears in New Jersey, you know, we had tremendous success, you know, and, you know, we were in the playoffs all the time, you know, the Stanley Cup runs. And so all the media were there. So there was some type of an association. But that did not affect me because I can sit right here and say that I've never given anything or sent anything off the record whatsoever. And I think that's where individuals or managers and coaches get in trouble is when they try and, you know, do something away to think that it might come back in a positive way later. So I feel very comfortable sitting here. And John, you and I have had those conversations many times. So no,
and you never say a darn thing. You never say a darn thing, Luke.
Thanks, John. but no, I didn't find it any different. I enjoyed Toronto in every way whatsoever. And if I didn't go to the island, I had the similar situation, you know, after the 3 years in Toronto to stay on in the same capacity I am right now. That was part of the agreement when I went there. So it's, you know, so no, I had no issues.
Is the fishbowl in Toronto a hindrance, though?
I don't think so. I think it's a great atmosphere. You know, it's pure hockey in every way whatsoever. And, you know, I don't think Toronto is for every person or any player. Just like I can say that, you know, college hockey isn't for every young hockey player and junior hockey isn't. It depends upon the individual. And I found that out in, you know, like Montreal. I traded for many players who played in Montreal who had talent, but it didn't seem to fit there, whether it was the pressure there. You bring them to New Jersey, they handle it a little different. So you have to look at the individuals who you get involved with that type of an atmosphere. Same thing, the Yankees, Yankee Stadium. There aren't many baseball players who sometimes can survive in that only because of the media pressure and exposure where you're expected to win. And what greater atmosphere is there to be part of being expected to win?
Hey, you brought up college hockey and junior hockey. With the amount of years you have been around the game, where do you think the two are right now, considering the NCAA has relaxed its rules?
It's interesting because this is the way it was when I first came into the game. I mean, when I was coaching in college, Major A players were eligible to go to college. You know, so I don't see where it's going to be a problem. It's going to level off. Where the problem is in college hockey right now is the NIL and the amount of dollars that are being put into players going there. No different than if you go back to some of your junior teams that got themselves in trouble when they were paying some players. So I think all of this will level off, I think, in every way whatsoever. And players will make that decision whether they want to go to college or they want to go to the pro, to go to junior. They think that's a more direct path to professional. But right now, what will happen is some of the junior players who don't have the opportunity to, say, play pro or didn't work out, they'll have the opportunity to go to college now. And so it'll all level off. This is what it was yesterday, you know, in the past.
So is there a right way or a wrong way?
No, it depends upon the individual. I think what he feels he needs, or, you know, what his parents might feel, if they want to go to college. You know, I had many players out of the Major A's in my earlier days in college coaching, and they came and they went on and played pro after, and some of them didn't. Some of them, you know, used their education to get a vocation in another field. So I think it's up to the individual. I think the junior programs are fantastic in what they've done, the way they've taken care of the players and having post-education too. And then, of course, I'm a believer in the college game, you know, a part of it for a long time. But players now are going to school maybe for 1 year, 2 years. And the rules will be the same with the new collective bargaining agreement as far as the, you know, the rules as far as turning pro. So once that happens, it'll be a level field everywhere. Whereas, you know, as we know, the European rules are different than Major A and college are different today. So I think they've closed that loop.
What about the salary cap? What was it like before, and how did you adapt and enjoy it after?
Well, I loved it the way it was before. And the reason I loved it is that free agency was a little later at that given time. When the salary cap came in, we brought free agency down a lot younger, which, you know, forced a lot of decisions that really you didn't have enough time to make, where then you could develop players the way they should be developed. You could keep them longer. And, you had more people staying within your organization. And, you know, when it did become a free agent time, if they had success, they could go somewhere. But the development process was a lot better at that in those days. I mean, I don't think you're going to see in the future, like in 95, we won the Calder Cup and also won the Stanley Cup in the same year. And a lot of those players in the minors then were capable of playing somewhere and did go on and play in the NHL. But if this were in the present salary cap situation where free agency is so young and they can become, you bring them up too soon because, you know, you're going to lose them. And you extend their contracts, you make decisions, well, you know, I have to. I think arbitration, you know, is almost non-existent right now because it's so difficult to know what a player will get. The comparables that are can be put on a piece of paper in front of an arbitrator, it could go anywhere. It's you know, whereas in baseball, it's either high, low. That would restrict it if it were done like that. So now it's a very, very difficult in this present system. You know, some of the decisions and you make, and I'm glad that they reduced the length of the contracts right now by a year because it's a magnet. It really is. And it's the same for every general manager, or every team, you know, the old expression, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
Free agency used to be 31, now 27 for those that aren't aware of the changes in the past. Yeah. That's a big difference in control of your players. Basically, yeah.
And Darren, even younger, if they do make it as an 18-year-old,
right.
Because it's the number of years. So it is a big difference. That's the biggest difference when we talk about the you know, non-cap and cap days.
The other thing is, and I know you and I've talked about this before, that you idolized or enjoyed the way Montreal ran their organization for years and years and years, and they were a dynasty. They were a dynasty for a long period of time. You know, Frank Selke Sr., Sam Pollock, all those people built something special there. Now we're in an age of parity where there's what we talk about is the mushy middle. Is hockey better with the mushy middle, or do we need dynasties again?
Well, I love dynasties. I think that drives the sport. But we're in a parity world, and, you know, it's we have to accept it because that's the way it is. Mm-hmm. I never minded the old days. I didn't care how much another team spent on their, you know, players. I only worried about what we did as long as we had the opportunity to develop them and knew that we could have them for a period of time. So we could have those patients to get them to be better And now we don't have those patients where we have to make certain decisions. So it's up to the individual, but I'm trying to answer your question for me personally with it. I loved it. And I, you know, yes, I learned from the Montreal, you know, between Montreal and the Celtics and, you know, and Lombardi days, the way they did things. You learn from everybody. And I was very fortunate in my college days that I played for two exceptional coaches, one in baseball and one in hockey, who was way ahead of their time. And every year after I left there, I realized how far ahead of their time they was. So, you know, we're a disciple of, you know, everyone.
I mean, actually, now that you've said that, we throughout the league, we talk to people that they mention your name as their mentor. I mean, George McPhee talks about you, Billy Guerin. There's tons of managers and coaches and former players that talk about you as their mentor. Who were your mentors?
My mentors were my two college coaches, a gentleman named Alex Nahegian, the late Alex Nahegian, baseball coach there, also a football coach at Harvard. You know, he did both. And a fellow named Tom Eccleston, who I think coached up until he was 85, you know, and it's just that, and they were two different human beings. One was very disciplined and structured, and the other was, you know, maybe 180, but they found a way to get the players to believe in what was done. And, you know, and I learned from them. I was very fortunate to have these two because I went into college at a very young age and, you know, I was a sponge and I watched how they did things and actually went back and was an assistant to one in the baseball for a period of time and certainly communicated with the hockey coach and was captain in both sports with them. So they left a mark on me, you know, plus a lot of other people. You learn from everybody, you know, what worked for them, but you have to be very careful. You have to take from people, but it has to be who you are.
Were you a better baseball player or hockey player?
I have no idea. I have no idea. I enjoyed both of them in season, love both, and still do today, and enjoy every bit about it when in season.
What did you learn when you stepped behind the bench a couple of times as a manager?
Well, you know, it wasn't something new to me. I coached in college for, you know, some 14, 15 years before I went into the pros. But at those given times when I went in, you know, one was a necessity because of the coach sickness, and the other, we weren't going good, and I didn't like some of the things that I saw. Rather than what I wanted to see, just what the personality was at the players, where we were at that time. So you learn a lot there. But every so often, sometimes, and I've often said, and I know that this would be an outlaw type of a thing, but it wouldn't be a bad idea if a general manager stepped behind a bench, even with his coach, to see how some of the players react at certain times or learned a little more. You know, it'd be a little bit of a renegade thing, but it'd be interesting.
Were you ever close to doing that?
What's that, going with the coach?
Yeah.
No. I didn't have that much of a nerve. No, I don't think that would have been right. But, you know, I actually thought about it. There's nothing like being there. And I had the good fortune in when I was real young to be in the locker room of the pros and to look and listen and watch and, you know, some of the greatest speeches ever given. I will never forget one. It was a playoff with the and the old Providence Reds, and I won't get who it was. And I saw one of the greatest speeches in the world when the coach walked in the room and had a basket and had a bucket, and I shouldn't say a bucket, a leather bag, you know, one that we would maybe put clothes in, and opened it up and dumped it on the floor and said, "This will be here if we win tonight, and it will not be here if we don't win," and put it back in a bag and left. And you know what was in the bag.
Which now would not be allowed to be able to do.
Exactly. That's how much times have changed.
We'd be remiss not asking you about preparing for an Olympics, which you have done as the manager. 2002 in Salt Lake City, you were a big part of that. You were a part of others as well. What do you think Billy Guerin is going through right now? And he's got a lot more. I believe he probably has more choices than you had when you were the manager, correct?
I think he does. I think he'll make the right choices, you know, and as you know, and Billy and I communicate, as you know, he was one of my former players, and we drafted him in New Jersey, traded him, you know, but the relationship and the friendship has never left. Actually saw him a couple of days ago. He was in for Larry Brooks's funeral, and Billy stopped there too. He'll make the right decisions. You know, the Olympics are a little different than, you know, the World Games or the World Cup. It's a little different game. Officiating is different. So you have to make certain decisions. But it's nice to have a choice to make decisions. I know when we had to make decisions in 96, it wasn't easy in some cases. And, you know, that was totally different than, you know, 98 with the Olympics. So, you know, you learn. But Jimmy's he's got a great staff with him of people, and he'll do well.
Did you have a philosophy when you built your international teams?
My thought process was certainly I love a certain style of play. You know, I believe in, you know, you start at the goal. And you work out, and, you know, and we had Mike Richter at that era. As far as, you know, for me, he's was just tremendous, especially in that World Cup series. And our defense, you know, was exceptional when you look at the defense we had. And if you look at that 96 team, and if you look at that Canadian roster that they had, you know, that was some challenge for us. And to me, I still think that the 96 World Cup success was really helped the American player. Certainly in the 80 Olympics recognized the college player, and the 96 said that the American player is here. And they've all went on to have tremendous careers.
Who should be a favorite in Milan, Cortina?
I really wouldn't even want to make that that thought process. I think it'll come down to, as it always does, in my opinion, because of the parity and, you know, what, and we see what the, how the Finnish teams and the Swedish teams rise to the occasion in these type of tournaments. I think it'll come down to goaltender.
You always had a good goaltender, though. That guy named Brodeur was pretty good.
Not bad at all, John. It was nice to go to bed at night and know who your starting goaltender was every night. It certainly was. I was actually with Marty Saturday night. He was inducted into the New Jersey Hall of Fame, and I went into Jersey and spent some time with him.
And when you said Mike Richter's name, I could only think, oh, holy smokes, the Devils general manager is taking Mike Richter.
Well, you're talking American.
I know. Oh, I know.
And he was, and listen, on the other side, in that 96, a couple of my players were there, Scotty Stevens and Nita. So, you know, there was a line.
Yeah.
This has been fun catching up. I really appreciate it. Glad you're doing great, and continue those Board of Governor meetings, giving the guys, holding them to the fire.
Thanks, Darren. Always a pleasure. And John, of course, John and I go way back, and he still owes me a glass of Brunello.
Yeah. But by the way, get the schedule changed. I know you loved regional games, regional rivalries more. Get the schedule changed. We need more regional rivalries at that. Talk at the board meeting. Talk about that.
I'm with you. You're not going to get me to dispute that one. I'm 100% with you. The old Patrick.
Absolutely. I mean, we need Calgary, Edmonton 6 times. We need Devils, Rangers 6 times. And then Hatzepetras could figure the rest out himself. So
you're preaching to the choir.
Patrick division praise. I love it. Thanks again, Luke.
With the NHL app, you can listen to every NHL game right from your phone. And with home and away broadcast feeds, you choose your way to listen.
And he scores!
Whether you're at work, at the gym, or stuck in traffic, the NHL app puts you right in the action all season long. Every team, every game, everywhere you go. Download the NHL app and never miss a moment.
And here I thought you Facebook messaged him to get him on the show, but apparently that didn't happen.
No. But he did say... In that question, he said he thought social media was good. I didn't mishear him, did you?
Well, good in the fact that it holds the players accountable.
Accountable. I know. That's when I heard him say that, I said, holy smokes, there's an in there. You don't like social media now, do you, Lou? No. We've always had a great relationship. And you're right, he can be intimidating. And I have actually many times, Darren, I've told him that. I says, Lou, you know, people are scared shitless of you. Seriously, just scared of you. And he laughs and laughs and laughs and laughs. Because what we saw with Lou Lamoriello today is exactly what he is. Straightforward. He has rules. He has structure. And as long as... as long as you know you abide by that, then you have a great relationship. I'll tell you one quick story. So when I was vice president of broadcasting for the league for a bit, the Devils were a pretty good team, and one of our rights holders got into a pissing match with Lou about doing a pre-game coaches interview. And it just so happened at that point that Lou was the coach. It was one of those times where he was coaching. And so 20 minutes, I'm not at the game, but 20 minutes before airtime, the phone rings and it's the rights holder. And so then I have to phone Lou. And I said, Lou, you have to do this interview. Well, John, is it in the contract? Yes, it is, Lou. Okay. I will do it then. As long as it was written down. If there was anything vague, then there was no way. But if it was on paper and, you know, the teams and the league and the everyone had agreed to it, then he would do it. But if there was just something that was subjective about it, Lou would say, well, no, my rules are more strict than others. I mean, I remember when I was running Hockey Night, you know, we started to do those bench side interviews, right? The ones during the warm up. Well, you couldn't do them with the Devils because Lou didn't want anybody other than team personnel on his bench, and those things were not in the contract with the league or with the teams. So we would do them with the visiting team, and then he'd get mad that we were on the visiting bench.
Well, cameras in the room. He didn't like cameras in the room for the broadcast.
Right. Until it was written into the contract, and then he had no choice. Yeah. But he lives and dies with his rules, and that's the way it is.
You couldn't play for him.
No, I know. And I was waiting for him to give me a shot about my facial hair. You know what? I could play for the Islanders now.
And he would have legendary people in the organization. Larry Robinson walked by. Larry? Larry hadn't shaved? Larry? Okay. Yeah. it was part of it. Do you think he could fully manage successfully under all that happens around the league now? Like it is a challenge, and he is a guy that has been around the game so long, and it's tough to change all the way.
Yep. I understand that. I think he said something very interesting at the beginning when you asked him the question about what's different, and it's the amount of people around the game. So you have a staff and you have 10 or 11 people and say, should we trade for this guy? And you get 10 votes no, and then lose the 11th vote, and he says, I'm trading for him. so that's the part where you do wonder about it. But make no mistake about it, the game, and I have bias, the game has been better for Lou Lamoriello being in it. USA Hockey is better for Lou Lamoriello having been in it. Lou Lamoriello is a member of the Hockey Hall of Fame because he has made more positives, far more positives than he has negatives in the game of hockey.
And you mentioning the amount of mentors, mentorship opportunities that he's had over the years.
It's crazy. I mean, everybody in the game has a Lou story. Yeah, Lou. When I had a doubt, I had Lou. I have friends that played for him at Providence. I got to call Lou. Because Lou is always one of those, like, if I need guidance, Lou's on my guidance list. I can tell you nothing. During COVID, you know, we were all secluded. No reason for it to occur. I'd be sitting at home on a Sunday afternoon. And I'm not the king of technology, but my FaceTime would ring. And it's Lou, just checking in. Yeah, just checking in. How you doing? You know, and so actually, he taught me that. And from that point on, during the pandemic, I phoned five people every day to make sure everybody was okay. I phoned five people, different people every day, just to say hello.
And that's great. It
was something Lou taught me.
Little jumping off point from Lou Lamoriello. Inspiration. Take that into your week. We'll be back with you on Wednesday. What do we got going there?
Devin Dubnyk.
Okay.
Devin Dubnyk, the
Doobie.
Don't call him Doobie. Please don't call him Doobie. Don't, whatever you do, don't. Because I want to know he's a pretty good story as a goaltender, but I was one of those guys very critical of him as a goaltender in Edmonton. So,
like, and then Phoenix, boom. And then found his footing and played every game in Minnesota.
Sean Burke.
The goalie guru. We will see you then on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon.